Chapter 6. The first time Kate O'Hare caught up to Nick Fox, after 5 years of hunting him down, she had him cornered on the roof of a skyscraper. As a helicopter swooped down to pick him up, he told her that she wasn't going to shoot him. He was right. The second time she caught him, she ran into his car with a bus as he was escaping from a jewel heist. This time he didn't get away. And she could still remember the feeling that ran through her body when she finally put cuffs around his wrists. Just a few days after she handed over his case files to the federal prosecutor, Nick Fox escaped from custody. Kate tracked him down again, this time halfway around the world, only to find out that he had been offered a deal to work unofficially for the FBI. In the years since, he and Kate had broken a dozen major cases together. They'd also broken every rule in the FBI handbook about fraternization between an agent and a confidential source. She never thought she'd have to hunt him down again. Never thought she'd have to relive the moment when she slipped those handcuffs on Nick Fox's wrists. Now, she would have to apprehend Nick and his father. Kate had already eaten 3 of the Marcolini chocolates when the phone rang. She knew exactly who it was, and was only surprised that the call had taken so long. "You let Nick Fox break his father out of prison." The voice belonged to Agent Jessup, but it sounded a full octave too high. "You let Nick Fox break his father out of prison," he said again. "Agent Jessup, sir?" "You let Nick Fox break his father out of prison. If you could just calm down a moment, sir, try to breathe, drink some water." He tried to say the same thing a fourth time, but now it sounded like he was hyperventilating. "Can you sit down and put your head between your knees?" Kate asked. "Maybe breathe into a paper bag." There was a momentary silence as Agent Jessup pulled himself together, found his breath, and then read off a quick list of orders for Kate. "Number 1, you are officially suspended. Number 2, you are on the next plane to Los Angeles. Number 3, the second I see you, I am going to unsuspend you just long enough to suspend you again, only this time in person."
"I understand you're upset, sir."
"No, you don't. My boss is upset, and her boss, and his boss, all the way to the director himself. Those people are all upset."
"Me? I'm something else.
I don't even think there's a word for it."
"I'm sorry, sir. I'll pack right now."
She hung up the phone and looked in the hotel mirror, asking herself if she was ready to find a new career. She stopped to read Nick's note one more time. "Kate, I know how much you love chocolate, and these are the very best Paris has to offer. I'm taking my father to a country where there is no extradition to any country in the European Union, nor the US or UK. I can't drag you into this any further. This quest is a personal matter, and it might end your career, if not your life. You'll have to let your inner badger loose to see me, which I hope will be soon. Love, Nick, your favorite squirrel." There were about 50 countries that met the extradition criteria, but only a couple where Kate could see Quentin Fox hiding out for the rest of his life. The Maldives. Maybe Indonesia. Yeah, that felt right, she thought. A nice little place on the beach, on the island of Bali. She wondered if Nick would dare to come back to Los Angeles after helping his father to hide away forever. His assignment with the FBI would obviously be over, which meant he would probably be looking at a prison cell again, but with no last-minute deal to save him this time. Unless, of course, she killed him first. Then she'd be the one going to prison. At that moment, it felt like a toss-up. She threw the rest of her things into her travel bag and went downstairs to get a taxi to the airport. Nick stood on the other side of the street and watched Kate get into the taxi. He waited half a minute, then turned toward the Champ de Mars. His father was waiting for him there. A thin leather messenger bag was slung over Quentin's shoulder. He entered a call on his cell phone, put the phone in his bag, and watched Nick approach. "How's Professor Lewis?" Nick asked. "Finally calmed down," Quentin said.
He's never been chased by a bunch of assassins before? Professor of Germanic literature. You'd think he'd get that all the time. Nick looked up at the Eiffel Tower. It had just opened for tourists again. The first lifts had gone up, and people were already getting in line for the next. Does your professor have any more ideas on where we're going? Nick asked. He's had a chance to do a little more research since we talked at the safe house. Apparently, there's this other Nazi map called the Loo map, brought to America just before the war by a Nazi, or at least a Nazi sympathizer. The history is kind of hazy, but Professor Lewis thinks we're working with something based on the same idea as the Loo map. It's actually different pieces of one master map that need to be collected and put together. Even when you do that, you end up with a complex code that has to be deciphered before you can follow the directions. So what does this mean for us? It means that the banner on the right side was probably a pointer to the next section of the map. The key locator symbol, he said, was over that Nazi slogan. I had to describe it to him to help him remember what it looked like. I forgot the name he had for it, but it represents the sun. Nick looked back up at the tower, shielding his eyes from the bright morning sunlight. Still not getting it. It means up, Nick. The highest point on the tower. That's where we have to go. Nick blinked away the glare, looked at his father. At least, that's where I'm going to go, Quentin said. Not going to happen, Dad. This time it's my turn. Kate placed her unloaded Glock, a box of 9mm shells, and her Ontario MK3 knife into her hard travel case and locked it. As she waited in the baggage check line at Charles de Gaulle Airport, she knew she would have 12 uninterrupted hours in the air. 12 hours to consider the end of her career, and just how badly Nick had betrayed her. It had always been a complex relationship between the two of them. As much as she tried to keep it professional, there was always something more. There had been moments when she had let him get close to her, in spite of her best judgment. There was that one time when she had come home to find that he had broken into her apartment and had left a trail of Toblerones leading to him. He definitely knew the quickest way to her heart. To add insult to injury, she would be flying on the FBI dime, which meant economy comfort instead of the automatic first-class upgrade whenever she traveled with Nick. So maybe 6 inches of extra legroom? No fully reclinable seat that felt like a lazy boy chair. No gourmet food. No free cocktails. Even though it was morning here in Paris, it was whatever the hell time it was back in Los Angeles, and she really wanted something to drink. When she reached the front of the line, she put the travel case on the scale and told the ticket agent about the weapons that were inside it as required by law. As the agent printed her luggage tag, Kate found herself picturing 2 squirrels sitting on another airplane, surely already off the ground by now, flying toward the South Pacific. In first class, of course, toasting Quentin Squirrel's new life. Next, she pictured herself as a badger, sitting in economy, eating a bag of broken stale pretzels. A badger, she thought, who should be out chasing squirrels. And one of those squirrels just told her he hopes to see her soon. You lousy son of a bitch, she said out loud. Way too loud. The agent looked at her like he'd been slapped across the face. I'm so sorry, Kate said. I was talking about someone else. Can I get that bag back? The agent had just put the tag on it and was about to drop it onto the belt. I need it back, Kate said. Please. He hesitated again, then gave it back to her. Is there a problem, ma'am? Yes, I'm a total idiot. Badgers don't get on airplanes. They chase squirrels. She turned and pushed her way through the people in line behind her. The agent called after her, but she didn't break stride. Idiot, 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 she said, all the way out the door. A few minutes later, she was in a taxi, heading back to the Eiffel Tower. Quentin Fox opened up his messenger bag. The security guard took a quick look through it and pulled out the largest medical inhaler he'd ever seen. That's from my asthma, Quentin said. Just in case. It's very high up there. The guard put the inhaler back into the bag and let him through. Quentin and Nick took one of the first lifts to the intermediate level.
Do you know what I'm going to be looking for? Nick asked.
I told you. You're not doing this. I'm not letting you climb the Eiffel Tower, Dad. Watching you jump off that dome was bad enough.
Quentin thought about it.
I have to admit, that was pretty terrifying.
So it's settled. My turn today. Just tell me what I'm looking for.
I was hoping to figure that out when I got up there. Something that could hold an old piece of paper inside it. For 75 years.
No problem, Nick said.
Piece of ghetto. When they got to the first deck, they went directly to the next set of lifts.
That was quite a highlight reel they showed us in the Interpol briefing, Nick said.
Cairo, Barcelona, Cyprus.
Cairo was my first. They had just recruited me. I sold a rug to an arms dealer. God, was I nervous.
So how do you go from selling a rug to a bad guy to a part-time secret career as a spy?
They told me they wanted me to be an independent operative, Quentin said.
An off-the-books resource. Whenever they needed someone who could infiltrate the art world, or a museum, or anything to do with ancient artifacts, they kept coming back to me, and I kept getting the job done. And I started to really like it.
But I personally watched you circumvent the Vatican's entire security system. Where did that come from?
That was another one of my specialties. Remember, I had to deal with security systems every day as a high-end art dealer. I even helped other galleries set up their systems. A few museums, too. Alarms, video surveillance. Who better to break a system than the man who knows every way to build one?
Nick shook his head in amazement.
He could have used his dad on a few jobs over the years.
Enough about me, Quentin said.
I want to hear about you and Kate.
They were interrupted by the lift door opening. They rode all the way to the top, stepped out, and surveyed the upper platform. There were four sides, each identical. Approximately 20 other people were up here on the platform with Nick and Quentin. Nick counted at least 5 languages being spoken. There was yet another level above them, but this one was inaccessible to the public. It held only satellite dishes and other electronic equipment.
Last chance to let me do this, Quentin said.
Nick took the inhaler from his father and removed the fake shell to reveal the spindle of thin steel cable underneath, with a hook on the end. Quentin pulled a pair of black rubber gloves from his pocket and gave those to Nick, too.
I'll create a distraction, Quentin said.
Fake a heart attack?
Come on. That's amateur stuff.
Quentin took out a deck of cards from his other pocket. He grabbed Nick by the arm, looked him in the eye, and said,
Be careful, son.
Nick nodded. A couple walked by, speaking English.
Hey, folks, Quentin said to them. Can I show you a quick magic trick?
As Nick moved to the other side of the platform, Quentin had the woman pick a card, sign it, then put it back in the deck. He shuffled, took out the wrong card, then passed his hand over the card to turn it into her card, complete with signature.
It was basic magician's sleight of hand. A pinky break, a force, a color change.
The key is to put some charm into it and really lean on the reveal. Get a big reaction from your mark.
That's all it takes.
A few other people wandered over to see what the attraction was. The whole city of Paris was laid out below them, yet they'd rather watch a stranger do a silly card trick.
Nick had to admit, it was the perfect one-minute diversion.
Nick checked one more time to make sure he was not being watched by anyone on the platform. Then he tossed the metal hook onto the railing of the electronic deck above him, grabbed onto the cable, and used it to help pull himself up. He climbed over the railing, got his bearings on the platform full of electronic equipment, and took a moment to gaze out over the city. He looked up at the next part of the tower that led most of the way to the top. It was a warm, still, sunny day down on the ground, 1,000 feet above
It was a different world. A stiff breeze hit Nick broadside. He kept climbing, resetting the metal hook, wondering if this thin metal cord would be enough to stop him if he lost his grip. There was yet one more structure that led even higher, and then the worst part of all. A thin column of smooth metal, at least another 30 feet tall. There were a series of horizontal indentations on the column, one every 2 feet, barely enough to give him a handhold and foothold. He didn't think about how he would find the map link when he reached the top. That was another problem to solve, once he got up there. Right now? All he wanted was to not fall off and die. He didn't look down. He just kept going. It was late morning. The Paris traffic was already heavy. Kate swore to herself in the back seat as the taxi made its way into the heart of the city. Far ahead of her, she saw the Eiffel Tower rising above the other buildings. It was still at least 2 miles away. She opened her hard case, took out the Glock and her shells, slid out the magazine, and loaded it. The taxi driver caught sight of what she was doing and watched her in the rearview mirror. Kate took out her FBI shield and showed it to him. "It's all good," she said. "Keep going." She lifted her right pant leg, strapping her knife sheath to her calf. This time the driver smiled in appreciation. It was the sexiest thing he'd seen all week. The taxi ground to a halt again. The driver honked his horn, the universal language of taxis everywhere. "This is a really nice case," Kate said, putting it down beside her on the back seat. "Take care of it." She slipped the gun into her belt, threw some money into the front seat, got out of the car, and started running. Nick finally reached the top of the column. At the very top of the tower was one final structure, a round base holding a single rod with a light on top. He clipped his hook onto the base, caught his breath, and looked carefully at the rod. A gust of wind caught him. He closed his eyes and held on tight. When he opened them, he saw a metal cuff circling the rod. He looked closer. It was a slightly different metal, a slightly different color, and very faintly embossed on the surface was a tiny swastika. He wondered if the French knew that there was such a symbol, no matter how small, on the very top of their national monument. How many people had even been up here? Maybe the one guy unlucky enough to have to change the light bulb every few months. He was probably too busy holding on for his life to notice a tiny symbol on a piece of metal. Nick reached up and grabbed the metal cuff, tried to move it. It wouldn't budge. He took the spindle holding his metal cord, hit it against the bottom of the cuff like a hammer. He hit it again, and again. It moved. He kept hitting the bottom of the cuff, driving it upward a quarter inch at a time. Finally, he saw the edge of a piece of folded paper, and he had to work around it as he kept striking at the cuff. "This is going to be tricky," Nick thought. "As soon as it's free, it's going to fly away." He hit, grabbed at the paper, hit, grabbed at the paper. He hit one more time, and then it was free, soaring into the air like a runaway bird. He lunged for it, feeling his fingers touch it at the same instant his other hand lost its grip on the base. For one eternal moment, he was in free fall, 1,000 feet above the ground, looking down for the first time and seeing the whole city about to rush up toward him. Nick grabbed with his free hand, refound the spindle, felt the cord tighten, and hoped to God that it would hold him. It did. It held. He was practically horizontal to the ground, his legs wrapped around the column, and the thin cord holding the rest of him suspended in the air. In his other hand was the old piece of paper. Quentin Fox looked at his watch. He paced back and forth nervously. He had no more card tricks to perform. The diversion was less of a priority now that his son was up there. If he was seen dropping back onto the platform, that wouldn't be such an issue, because at that point they would be in motion, heading back to the ground. "Beautiful day," a man standing next to him said. Quentin couldn't place the accent. German. Or something farther east. Maybe Czech? Maybe Polish? maybe Ukrainian. Quentin turned to see the man. He had dark eyes, dark stubble on his chin, jet black hair tied into a ponytail. The sleeves of a black t-shirt were stretched over his carefully toned biceps. "I'd like to know where he is." The man spoke his English carefully, as if weighing each word to make sure it was correct. "Sorry. I don't know what you're talking about," Quentin said. The man lifted his chin, indicating the rest of the tower above them. "Up there? Right now?" Quentin shook his head. "Can't help you." The man stepped a few inches closer, lowered his voice a notch. "If he finds something up there, he will give it to me, along with the other item that was taken. I will take both of them, and then you will be free to leave." "Okay, you got me," Quentin said. "I did take those towels from the hotel. They were so soft, I couldn't help myself." "Do you see those people behind us?" Quentin glanced over his shoulder. A family of four were looking out over the city. Mom, Dad, one boy about 12, a girl maybe 8 or 9. "The girl will go over the railing first," the man said. "Then the father, who will try to fight me. I will break his nose first, which will blind him and make it easier to throw him over. Then the boy. Then the mother, after watching the rest of her family die." Quentin looked into the man's eyes. Then he noticed the red star tattoo on the left side of his neck. Quentin hadn't received the same briefing that Nick and Kate had, but he didn't need it. He already knew all of the major players in this game. The Brotherhood had hired the Rotorstern Corps to help find the Raubgold for them, and this man standing in front of him was one of them. If he got his hands on this map, they'd all be one big step closer. The man reached into his jacket pocket and pulled out a black carbon fiber knife with a 6-inch blade. "When is he coming down?" "How about now?" Nick said, as he swung down from the railing and kicked the man in the face. The knife fell to the ground. Behind them, the mother screamed and grabbed one child. The father grabbed the other. "This way," Nick said to Quentin. He went to the stairway that led down to the lower levels. The gate was closed and blocked, with a sign indicating it was for emergencies only. Nick kicked the gate and it flew open. The two men pounded down the metal stairs 2 and 3 at a time, each flight cutting back and forth in a crisscross pattern. From below them, Nick and Quentin heard the pounding of footsteps coming up to cut them off. The footsteps were getting closer. Nick looked above them, saw the man from the top platform coming down. "You sure you didn't bring your parachute?" he asked. "And maybe an extra one?" He looked through the interior of the structure. The opposite side was about 20 feet away, up here where the tower was at its thinnest. But there were no stairs on the other side. Nick took the spindle of metal rope, weighed the hook with one hand for a half second, and tried to hurl it across to the other side. It clanked against the metal and fell. Nick pulled up the hook, tried again. It clanked and fell again. "We're about to have a real party here," Quentin said, looking up at the one man coming down, then down at however many men were coming up. It sounded like at least 3 or 4 of them. Nick took a breath, gave the hook a kiss for good luck, and tossed it across the gap again. This time, it caught and held. "Go," Nick said. "You first." Quentin looked down the interior of the tower, at what had to be a 500-foot drop to the level below them. Then he looked at the metal cord stretched across the 20-foot gap. "Go," Nick said. The man above them was just a few flights away. Quentin climbed over the railing, grabbed onto the cord, and tested it to see if it held his weight. It sagged, but it didn't break. He let go of the railing, trying not to look down. He passed one hand over another, like a monkey traversing a vine. Although a monkey would have done it without thinking, without expecting to die every second. The man from the top had reached Nick and stood a few feet away from him on the same platform. It was Nick's turn to notice the gem-toned arms and the red star on his neck. Nick put both hands up. "Give it to me," the man said. Sorry, Nick said. Can't do that. Do you have any idea what I went through to get it? The man charged, and Nick sidestepped at the last possible moment, deftly wrapping both hands around the man's wrist and guiding his blundering momentum over the railing. The man had half a second to look back into Nick's eyes, not so much terrified, but totally dumbfounded, before he fell 500 feet and crashed onto the roof of one of the lifts. There was a brief silence as the men below them paused to watch their fellow soldiers sailing by at terminal velocity. Then they started pounding their way up the stairs again. Below them, the intermediary deck was in pandemonium, with everyone screaming and trying to get away from whatever had just caused such a stunning impact. Quentin had worked his way across the cable and reached the other side of the tower. He turned and saw his son following behind him, moving much easier and faster. Sure. You got the gloves, Quentin said, freeing one hand at a time to shake them out and blow on the cable burns. We have to keep moving, Nick said. Be careful. Too late for that, Quentin said, as he started to follow his son down the interior of the latticework, working from one horizontal to the next like a giant ladder. From below, they heard police officers shouting instructions and blowing their whistles. By the time Nick and Quentin hit the ground, the whole tower would be on full terrorist event alert. If we get separated, Nick said, I'll meet you at La Terrasse. It's on the Seine. We'll have a nice lobster bisque with champagne. Can we get out of this alive first before we make lunch plans? Nick kept climbing down the latticework, warning Quentin whenever he found a handhold with too much oil or pigeon shit on it. When they reached the bottom of this interior section, they were still only halfway to the ground. How do we get out of here? Quentin said, looking around him. With all of the lifts in the tower shut down, at least 400 people were jostling in every direction at once, trying to reach the stairs. Just act natural, Nick said, brushing off his jacket. They both joined in the throng, going with the flow to the nearest set of stairs. They got halfway down when they saw another group of three men fighting their way against the tide, elbowing their way up the stairs. There he is, one of the men shouted, as soon as he spotted Quentin. The foxes both turned around and went back up, pushing their way through the crowd. When Nick finally reached the top of the stairs, he turned to locate his father. Quentin was gone. Kate heard the police whistles as she got closer. A dozen tourists rushed by her, running away from the tower. Then another group and another until she was pushing her way through a wave of humanity. As she got closer to the stairs leading up to the first level, she saw Quentin Fox flipping a much younger man over his shoulder. The man landed hard on the pavement. When the man came to his feet, he was holding a gun. The tourists all around him started screaming and clawing at each other to get away. Kate fought her way through, just as the man leveled his barrel at Quentin. She slid out her Glock and put it against the back of his neck. The man froze, not sure what to do next. Drop the gun, Kate said. The man complied, but a fresh wave of panicked tourists engulfed them. Kate was swept away, nearly falling over. When she regained her bearings, the man was gone. So was Quentin. Nick searched frantically for his father until he spotted two more men coming after him. One of them might have been the biggest man Nick had ever seen in his life. Nick hurried across the deck level, trying to find another staircase. With all of the lower lifts closed, a guard was now standing at the gate to shoo people away. Nick glanced behind him and saw the two men closing in on him. He tried to push his way past the guard, but the man put up a hand to stop him. Do me a favor and stop them, Nick said, slipping by the guard just as the two men were about to grab him. The guard and the men tangled with each other until the big man literally lifted the guard with one hand and threw him aside. It was just enough of a delay to let Nick climb his way around to the tracks on which the lower lifts rode up and down the tower's pedestal. There was a service ladder next to the tracks. Nick started climbing down the ladder, but when he looked up, he saw one of the men coming after him. When the man was close enough, he tried kicking Nick in the head. Nick ducked, grabbed onto the man's leather boot, and pulled. The man lost his grip and fell, half sliding, half bouncing his way to the bottom. Nick kept going, but when he looked up again, he saw the big man coming down next. With such long legs, the giant was able to take 5 and 6 rungs at a time. Nick grabbed onto the handrail next to the ladder and stepped off, sliding down the railing like a fireman going down a pole. Thank God for the gloves, he thought. When he looked up, the big man was right on top of him, holding on to the same railing and moving fast. Nick squeezed the railing with his gloves, slowing himself down as much as he could. He knew he'd have to time this just right. When the big man was just a few feet away, Nick put 1 foot back onto the ladder. He slipped off a few of the rungs, finally caught one, and came to a bone-rattling stop. He stepped away from the railing just as the big man's fingers brushed against his arm. Nick watched as the big man, now a prisoner to the basic physics of way more mass times acceleration, kept sliding past him on the railing. The big man's speed was too much to handle, and as he tried to slow himself down, he caught 1 foot and launched himself right off the pedestal, falling 100 feet to the pavement below. Nick continued down the ladder until he reached the ground. He turned to look back up at the tower. I hope you got out, Dad. 30 minutes later, Nick arrived at La Terrasse. He sat down at a table, his back to the wall so he could see anyone coming in. His father came through the door a few minutes later. I didn't even get to ask you, Quentin said, joining him at the table. Did you find what we were looking for? Nick nodded. You don't have the first piece anymore, do you? Quentin reached under his shirt, opened the money belt around his waist, and brought out the original map section he had stolen from the Vatican. They did a lousy search on me last night, he said. They were just holding me until the Interpol agent could get there. Nick reached under his own shirt and brought out the second map section from the tower. They glanced around to make sure they had a little privacy. Then they put the two pieces together and leaned over to examine them. The second piece was just as cryptic as the first, with squiggly lines that seemed to suggest topography, dotted with a random assortment of ancient runes. As on the first piece, this second piece had a separate line of text inside a banner, running down the right side. Der verrückte König verdickt den Schwanenritter. Nick took out his phone and entered the words into the Google Translate app. The insane king? Something about paying tribute, and a swan and a knight? Any idea what that means? You got me, Quentin said, but something tells me we're not done yet. They had a couple of drinks, and then Nick wandered outside while Quentin paid the bill. Nick walked down through the patio area to the dock and stood there for a while watching the boats cruising by on the Seine. He wondered where Kate was. Surely she had gotten his note. She was missing out on all the fun. The barrel of a gun pressed into his lower back. Where is he? A man's voice asked. What are you going to do? Nick asked. Shoot me right here. That's up to you. And your father. Then another voice. Put it down. Kate. Nick turned, saw Kate standing behind the man. She had her gun on him, while he still had his gun on Nick. It would have been a Mexican standoff if they weren't doing it in France. Put it down now, Kate said. Go ahead, the man said. Mr. Fox and I will both die together. Nick flashed Kate his charming smile. Took you long enough, he said to her. Seriously? It looks like I'm right on time. Saving your ass once again. I've been told it's one of my best features, Nick said. I see you got my note. It was a bit cryptic. I'm glad you figured it out. I wanted to give you something you could show Jessup. Something that would hopefully keep you from wasting away in a cubicle. Hey, the man said, jabbing Nick with the gun. Both of you, shut up! Nick turned as if to answer the man and saw his father come into view. The man with the gun sensed the same movement, diverting his attention for a quarter of a second. Nick pushed the gun barrel away with his left hand, chopped down on the man's wrist with his right. He kept twisting the gun counterclockwise, away from the man's trigger finger, away from his grip strength. As the gun came free, he put one hand in the center of the man's chest, gave him a good shove, and watched him fall into the river, 5 feet below the dock. When he looked up, his father had Kate in a wrist lock, her gun pointed harmlessly toward the sky. "I'm glad I got this chance to thank you," Quentin said to her. "Kate, is it?" "Yes," Kate said. "Let's all go somewhere where we can talk about this." A sharp whistle cut through the air as several Paris officiers de police came charging down from the street. "I'm sorry, Kate," Quentin said, "but we can't do that right now." Then he pushed her into the river, too.